Canada needs more teachers, especially ones who specialize in French as a second language. For a bilingual nation like Canada, this growing shortage is a problem. I'm Mimi Masson, and this is my podcast series about FSL teachers. While doing my PhD at the University of Toronto, I learned why we have so much trouble recruiting FSL teachers and why so many of them drop out of the profession. And I dedicated my research to finding ways to help them. Now, I'm sharing my research findings with you. From 2011 to 2015, we invited a group of teachers to join our online community so they could discuss their fears, their barriers, their successes, and their ideas with other fellow teachers. In the last episode, we talked about assessment, how to evaluate and grade students. Discussions around assessment came up a lot during the CSCL network sessions. The FSL teachers in this group shared new ideas about how language learners should be evaluated and how to get them more involved. In this episode, I'd like to cover another important topic that teachers discussed while participating in the network: how equity, diversity, and inclusion can go a long way towards helping students thrive in their FSL classes. English and French are the official languages of Canada, but despite the federal government framing bilingualism in a positive light, the coexistence of these two languages has long been a site for contention, particularly at the provincial level. Studies have repeatedly shown that French language education is considered an afterthought in minority language settings like Ontario. It's given a lower status. And a lot of the inequalities that FSL teachers face stem from that social discourse, which puts into question the value and prestige of French as a subject in schools. French teachers are asked to supervise classes while English teachers receive literacy training. Or French teachers' needs are not addressed in many professional learning communities because they don't cater to the needs of the majority. These studies highlight the systemic issues that French teachers continue to face in their practice. Those very issues have been widely investigated and reported on over the last three decades, and yet little has changed in the way of policy to eradicate feelings of marginalization among French teachers in their professional context. Tensions also exist within the French-speaking educational community. Many forms of French exist in Canada: Acadian French, Franco-Ontarian French, French from the Maghreb, Parisian French, or Quebecois French, and some are given a higher status than others. Studies have found that principals, parents, colleagues, and other educational stakeholders perceive certain ways of speaking, knowing, and being French as more valuable and appropriate than others. Native speakers of French are also usually given a higher status than those who come to learn it later in life. What's interesting is that many French language teachers in Canada are non-native speakers of French themselves. They learned it through study, just like their students are learning it. And yet, even though it's common, these French teachers are stigmatized. They often feel challenged as professional speakers of French, and their abilities and their cultural ownership of the language are often downplayed or put into question, even though they're fully trained, fully licensed educators. Those who have learned French through the Canadian school system, as graduates of core French or French immersion, for instance, may internalize and reproduce these discourses that inherently position them and their students they go on to teach as deficient or inadequate speakers of French. The fact that discourses surrounding the legitimacy of French speakers originate in schools is ironic and baffling. We're trying to encourage people to speak French, but then we send them the message that they're not good enough when they come to learn. For example, we have this terrible habit of judging French speakers for switching between languages when they speak, or making them feel that they haven't grasped the language enough if they're still searching for words. This puts a lot of undue pressure on both teachers and students, and it ignores the fundamental reality about Canada. Many of us are bilinguals, and these are common behaviors for people who speak more than one language. Many kids in FSL classes come from a variety of backgrounds and speak a bunch of different languages. Many of them are allophones. An allophone is a person whose first language is neither of Canada's official languages. Some of them are newcomers or refugees, or are the children of immigrant parents. Christina has a lot of experience with that.
For the majority of my students, French is a third language. Many of them speak Punjabi, Hindi, Gujarati, Tamil, Urdu, Arabic, Yoruba, Chui, Pashto, Dari, Somali, or Patois at home. Although they were born in Canada, many of my students only began learning English when they started school. Almost all of them have been studying core French since grade 4.
Something I found interesting while going through Christina's testimonies is that she never refers to her FSL course as a, quote, second language course. Because she and many of her students are plurilingual, she simply refers to it as French class. Even in the discourse she uses to talk about her practice, she refuses to place languages in some kind of first, second, third order. Christina is making a political statement about the status of her students' languages in her class. Teachers are working with a more diverse student population, and so must promote inclusivity, equity, and well-being in the classroom. This means they must explore ways of teaching with cultural and linguistic diversity in mind. Ignoring this reality and focusing on speaking French, quote, properly, is detrimental to these students' learning. It doesn't motivate them to keep learning French because we're not helping them establish a connection between the French language and their own cultures and identities. In the CSCL network, Christina shares her strategy for bridging this gap. In her classes, her students read, write, and speak about their cultures in French.
They want to learn this language so they can use it to say what they want to say. That's what sticks. It's not just like vocab and, you know, verbs on the board. These students have already experienced acculturation or assimilation during initial encounters with English. They're aware of the power English holds, especially when they become advocates for their parents as a result of their parents' inability to speak English. Students may feel that French is being imposed upon them if their own cultural identities are left out of the French classroom. When their cultural identities are included, they view French as another layer of multiculturalism. When students are given the opportunity to do this in the French language, it takes on a new meaning for them. As they share something of themselves, French becomes a part of them.
Identity exploration can be valuable, not only with language learning, but with building voice and making students feel more included. As Christina points out, we can and should use students' pre-existing cultural and linguistic knowledge and experiences to enhance their French learning. And the experts agree. Dr. James Cummins, a professor with the Department of Curriculum, Teaching and Learning at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education at the University of Toronto, wrote the following.
Pre-existing knowledge for language learners is encoded in their home languages. Educators should explicitly teach in a way that fosters transfer of concepts and skills from the student's home language. Research clearly shows the potential for this kind of cross-language transfer in school contexts that support biliteracy development. It is hard to argue that we are teaching the whole child when school policy dictates that students leave their language and culture at the schoolhouse door.
Christina stumbled onto this approach while she was teaching English in a small village in Asia, illustrating how past experiences make their way into teacher professional learning. The school where she taught had no technology, no Wi-Fi, no gym or library, and she reflects on how advantages that ended up being for her and her students.
It was a blessing in disguise because we had to have conversations. And I think that was great because we got to know the staff members, got to know each other. The students really got to converse with me because we didn't have anything else to do. I made it really important to focus on their knowledge and their languages as well. So we did a word wall. It was in English, it was in the local language, and it was also in the English script, but written in the pronunciation so that I could learn the words as well. So I was learning the local language while they were learning English. And I think that really helped motivate them. It was just an amazing experience, and it kind of led me to reassess how we approach education here and how we value it.
When she came back to Canada to teach core French, she started asking her students to compare French to their home languages.
For example, when explaining the difference between tu and vous in the singular second person form, I asked them if there are two ways to express this in their language, one that is familiar, one that is respectful. This is the case in most of their languages, and once again, the concept transfer takes place. By bringing my students' languages into the French class, they are able to make connections between their home languages and the French language. This validates their home cultures and creates the opportunity to discuss identity in class.
Studies have shown that we are more successful at learning a language when we understand and identify with its culture. It's not enough to have a strong command of grammar and vocabulary. In order to make French culture part of their identity, we need to teach in a way that moves past cultural stereotypes and creates a safe and empowering learning environment for our students. As Warford and White explain in their 2012 paper, quote, "Even speakers with a high degree of grammatical competence may fail to maintain even basic conversations with native speakers due to inappropriate transfer of sociopragmatics," end quote. Sociopragmatics is the ability to use social information such as conventions, norms, and values when communicating in a language. It's clear that being an FSL teacher is much more than just teaching students grammar and vocabulary. The FSL profession faces increasingly complex teaching demands, requiring that teachers develop strong intercultural awareness and competence. This is necessary for them to be able to negotiate and show their students how to negotiate ways of being and understanding between cultures. Teaching language is not just about learning a code. It's also about forming new relationships and learning new ways of understanding. This can become a two-way process in the FSL classroom where students share with their teachers and each other how their linguistic and cultural knowledge shapes their view of the world.
In order to dispel one-dimensional perceptions of French culture, you know, for example, the white man riding a bike with a beret on his head and a baguette tucked under his arm, another interesting activity would be to have the students view various photos taken in different countries that make up the Francophonie, followed by these discussion questions. What, if anything, makes this picture French? Could a similar picture be taken somewhere in Canada? Does this picture remind you of a country you're familiar with? In this way, students can make personal connections to Francophone people who are culturally similar to them. For example, my Jamaican students were excited to find that zouk and compa music from the French Caribbean is similar to Jamaican dance hall. This sort of discovery can lead to a discussion of colonization that led many countries to speak English, Spanish, French, and Portuguese. Students will realize that people who are culturally very similar ended up speaking different languages based on which country colonized them.
It's important, as Christina shows, to challenge flat stereotypical representations of French culture. La Francophonie is rich with heritage from France and Canada, but also from Vietnam, Cameroon, Morocco, Louisiana, and many other places in the world, places some of our multicultural students may be familiar with. Much of this, of course, is due to the fact that French is a colonial language that has traveled around the world and spread in Canada. It's also important for today's teachers and youth to not erase the colonial legacy of the French language, but rather to acknowledge it, learn how it affected and changed communities, and think about what kind of relationship they can forge with French so that it becomes a tool for them rather than an imposition. The changes necessary to improve the educational system require deep, meaningful shifts to reprofessionalize FSL teacher identities and practice. Professional learning is key to helping teachers address and potentially incorporate these complex issues into their practice. Multiliteracies represent different ways of knowing and interacting with the world. One way of reaching more students is by using different learning approaches and techniques, through writing, speaking, art, drama, and technology. Computer-supported collaborative learning networks can help teachers develop these new approaches and improve their teaching practice so that a greater number of students feel included and thrive in FSL programs. This podcast series was made possible thanks to funding from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council and the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education at the University of Toronto. I'm your host, Mimi Masson. Production, editing, and sound design by Sabrina Daniel. Voice acting by Shakina Rajendram and Jean-Nicolas Masson.